Michael Andaje was born in Colombo, Sri Lanka, then Ceylon, in 1943. Very much like the main character of The Cat's Table, his newest book, he was sent to England on a ship by himself in 1954. Michael then followed his brother to Canada in 62. He received his MA from Queen's University, Ontario, and began teaching at the University of Western Ontario. In 1970, he settled in Toronto, and from 71 to 1990, taught English Lit at York University and Clendon College. Michael is a poet, publishing 13 books of poetry, and of course, he is a novelist. His books include Coming Through Slaughter, In the Skin of a Lion, The English Patient, which won the Booker Prize and won the Academy Award for Best Picture, Anil's Ghost, Divisadero, and now The Cat's Table. The book is an end-of-empire adventure story about a boy's life-changing journey from Ceylon to England in the early 1950s. Welcome, Michael. Thanks so much for stopping by the Book Report.
Thank you.
How did you come to the title, The Cat's Table?
Well, it's a term, actually it's a German term for any table at a big banquet where the least significant people sit. So if you're at some banquet and you're by the kitchens, then you're at the cat's table. So I thought it fit in quite well with this book, where all the kind of insignificance and minor characters, you know, were always major characters in a way, that they were sitting at this table instead of the captain's table, which is always the posh one.
Mm-hmm. The story is a rite of passage about a boy aboard ship. How autobiographical is the work?
It's autobiographical in the sense that I did take a trip like this in the 1950s as an 11-year-old boy who had no kind of family with me. So I was kind of completely free and dangerously free. So that was autobiographical. And so that, you know, I didn't remember that journey at all very much, but I thought the idea of a boy on a ship alone at a kind of crucial point in his life going to England was a kind of, could be a fascinating adventure where he and his friends could all get into trouble constantly. So I thought that's how the book began.
Aboard ship, the boy describes himself as being free of the realities of Earth. How did you come up with that wonderful phrase?
Well, I mean, a ship, you're free of the realities of Earth, you know, and it is a kind of that, those rites of passage are times when you are away from society, the society that you know. And I'm always interested in those historical stages, like even in the Second World War, where you're an American or a Canadian and you suddenly end up in Italy. And so much of The English Patient was really a story about being free of the, you know, responsibilities of where you come from and where you normally live. And that allows you to kind of grow in a different kind of way, in a different kind of pace to the way we do it normally on a day-to-day basis.
The three boys had a rule during the voyage, do one forbidden thing each day. What a wonderful concept. Don't you wish we could apply it to all of our lives?
Well, I think some people still do, actually. But we don't often get the chance.
Yep. I love your line, who realizes how contented feral children are? With a line like that, is it something that you think of and save it for the right moment in your writing, or does it just flow?
You know, remarks like that actually just, they come out of the actual situation of the paragraph and the story. You know, I mean, when you're writing, you're also thinking. I mean, you don't really, when you're writing, you don't have a kind of hoard of phrases that you're in your pocket, you know, that you want to use at a certain time. So they grow really out of the situation. You know, the boy's alone, he's looking, it's his day free with his, away from his family, and, you know, that's how that phrase comes up.
At the dining table, the cat's table, Michael shares his meals with two other boys and several adults, including a botanist, a tailor, a pianist, and a retired ship dismantler. How did you choose those characters?
I'm not quite sure. You know, I mean, it was just a table, and I didn't kind of have them all at the same time. I think I began with the ship dismantler because I thought, you know, he was interesting to the kids, and he was quite shy. Whereas Mr. Mazzappa, who's the pianist, is much more gregarious and pushy. So they get to know him quite easily. But you know, so it's a very gradual thing where the those characters at the cast table, you know, link up with the boys. They have to be ready for that person. You know, it is a kind of education. So Miss Laskiri, who is a strange woman who maybe works for the British Secret Service, you know, is very, very shy and seemingly like a wallflower, you know, and then gradually she becomes more and more important. Whereas Zappa kind of jumps in right away and tells them all rude jokes and so forth.
The prisoner is a haunting character. How did you come to include him, and what does he signify, actually?
I'm not sure what he signifies. I mean, he kind of came out of the blue. You know, I'm always waiting for things to happen in my novels, you know, and I think he came out of a paragraph where I was saying, after the dancing, after the men were cleaning up the floors, they brought out the prisoner, and bang, suddenly I've got a prisoner on my hands, you know. And I guess you're also waiting for people like that to turn up and to kind of complicate the plot. And so it's really a story where it's like a kind of a French farce, you know, where you've got many people coming in and out of doors and so forth. It's a very contained location. So that, you know, you suddenly discover someone, a fragment of somebody, and then you discover more and more and more of that person as the novel progresses.
And in The English Patient, were you involved at the time of filming? And how did you feel those actors brought your characters to life?
I was more involved before the film got made, partly because I was working with Anthony Minghella, who's a writer and director, and Saul Sands, who was a producer. So that for about a year or so before, you know, doing the writing of the screenplay, I would meet them every time there was a new draft, and we'd talk about it for a few days, each one. So I was very, very involved in that sense, but not in any kind of sense of real power. I couldn't really get up and say, this is terribly wrong. You know, I mean, I would say that, and you know, they would listen, but you know, it was their film. And then I got involved with the editing. I mean, didn't get involved with the editing, but I was interested in editing, and that's why I did a book later on called The Conversations, which is a book of interviews with Walter Murch, who was the editor. Because editing is an art form I really love, and is very close to not just film, but to writing and to dance and music.
Every book club in the United States read The English Patient, and I know The Cat's Table is also on that must-read list. Do readers actually reach out to you and make comments, and are you kind of blown away by how they might interpret certain things?
Well, I mean, I'm also a reader, so I interpret things very strangely, perhaps, you know. So, you know, I think D.H. Lawrence says, never trust the teller, trust the tale, you know. So who knows, you know, what's really going on in the novel. But the writer thinks he or she does, you know. Yeah, I mean, I am blown away. I mean, I'm blown away by the fact that, you know, people are interested in reading the book. You know, you never know how a book is going to be taken. You know, when you're writing, you don't think this is going to be very good or very bad. You just want to save the book, you know, that when you're writing it. That's the main concern. So when a book takes off, it's kind of great and also a bit surreal.
Your books are so atmospheric and so evocative of a time and a place. How much of that is from the oral tradition of your native Ceylon, Sri Lanka?
It might be. I mean, I with that oral tradition that I grew up with, I certainly would be influenced by how people spoke and so forth. But I think when I'm writing, it's much, much more private and intimate thing. That you're writing, you know, I'm in a room alone and I'm trying to build up a scenario or a scene or a set, you know, or a location. So I want to see it. So when I write it, I'm really painting it or drawing it for the reader, you know. This is what the room is like. There's a fridge over here and there's no carpet and there's one painting. And so as you write, you kind of build up that, you know, location as much as you can. And then people walk in and they cause trouble and they leave and all that stuff. So it's a very intimate thing. It's not too much to do with an oral tradition, I don't think.
Is the book really a rite of passage, and is that what you want people to take away from it?
Well, I would hate to limit it to just one thing, I guess. You know, I mean, it's about everything. It's about at a certain point in life when anyone gets educated, you know, unofficially, you know, which is what happens in this book, I guess. But it's about everything, you know. And I don't kind of limit myself to say there's only one theme. You know, there are many, many things happening in the book, and you know, it's an adventure story for boys, and it's also a very plaintive story about an orphan-like sense in the narrator. And it's about the kind of vividness of characters around you in your life, you know. So it is that adventure. It is this kind of drama that kind of, you know, hopefully will entertain as well as, you know, make people sad or miserable or happy, whatever it is.
Are you already working on your next project?
No, not at all. Not doing nothing right now.
That's a wonderful thing because your book tour is very big.
Yeah, I'm just loafing around.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us
thank
today.
You.
The book is worth every single moment of your time.
Thank you very much.